Hello, and welcome back to the West London Witch. This episode includes some adult language and may not be appropriate for every listener. Listener discretion is advised. There are those places where we expect to be unconditionally comfortable and feel safe. Work, school, grandma's house, but most importantly, home. We share our homes with a whole host of different people. Friends, family, pets, neighbors. But most of the time, these people are invited, and we enjoy their company. But what if your house was filled with all sorts of residents that you didn't see all the time? And when you did, you knew they weren't living. Welcome to the second episode of The West London Witch, a podcast where we share stories about those times when we find ourselves very much not alone. Today's episode takes us to a tiny village in southern England, to a normal family home with some very abnormal activity. I'm Rebecca Strazina, and this is The West London Witch. Episode 2, Finding the Balance.
Okay, right. I hope you've got a hot brew because you're going to be in for the long haul now. So a little bit about the house. It is actually a prefab bungalow that is one of a strip of bungalows. They were originally one long prefab building that was built in the First World War. And located further away from where they are now in a site close to Winchester City, which is ironically now it's a graveyard. But at the time, they popped up these prefab buildings everywhere just as overflow for the hospitals couldn't take all of the wounded soldiers and wounded civilians. So after the war had finished, they decided to repurpose these buildings, and they went all over the country moving them all and putting affordable housing up. And so our particular bungalow is now one of six where they just divided up the building and sold them on, and here we are today. So my personal story with it actually starts from what I can remember around the age of sort of 4 to 6. It began, what I remember is I had these night terrors, and it sounds not scary to say now, but for a small child, this was sort of haunting. I used to sleep with my bedroom door open and the hallway light on, and this small white fluffy feather would come into the doorway, and it was as if the whole room was lit up by the moon rather than by the hallway light. And it used to just, I would freeze, not being cold, I just would freeze. And it would come at me, this feather, in stages. It didn't move softly or float. It sort of staggered towards me as it got bigger and heavier and heavier. I wouldn't be able to move. And the closer it got, I would wet myself or I would throw up down myself. And at that point, it just disappeared. Everything went and I could move and I'd get under my blanket and then start to have the courage to sort of, this all probably happened so much quicker than it actually felt at the time. It felt like an eternity. And I would either get the courage to scream for my mum, or if I was really brave or really frightened, I would actually bolt. At the time, obviously, it was just a feather. But in hindsight, I think that's just what my sort of really young mind saw it as.
As time went on, Hannah became too afraid to sleep in her own bedroom. So she started to sleep on her brother's floor.
He got a paper round at the age of about 9 or 10. So he'd be up at 5 o'clock in the morning to go before school. And that's when we would swap. So I'd get off his floor and I'd climb up his ladder into his cabin bed. And I'd get a couple of hours of decent sleep before school. One morning, I really vividly remember, he got up and got ready for his paper round. And I sort of sleepily climbed up onto his bed when he left. And I was just laying down and I was drifting back into a sleep, looking through. He had like wooden slats to hold sort of along the side of the bed to stop you falling out of it. And I was doing this like slow blink with my eyes where I was just drifting and I could see his bedroom door was open. The lights were off, but it was that sort of hazy light in there at sort of 5 o'clock light. And one blink and there was nothing. And then I blinked again and there was a woman with long dark hair and she was wearing like a white tabard. Her skin was so white, it was kind of see-through, but not see-through, more like a haze, but you could see detail. She was just staring at me, stood in the door, and it happened incredibly fast and I just sort of clenched my eyes shut and I thought, please don't be real. Please don't be real. Please don't be real. And I opened my eyes and she was eye to eye with me on the other side of the wood. I didn't have my eyes wide open. I was squinting. So I sort of was looking through my eyelashes almost. And she was just there, right into my eyes. And hers were like a bluey gray color. And the black was so black. I can picture her face now and it just chills me. And all I could see was her eyes, just this strip. So I just flung myself backwards up against the wall, screamed. I was hysterical, absolutely hysterical. My mum came flying into the bedroom, turned the light on. And she, at this point, my mum was still telling my brother and I that the house, there's no such thing as ghosts. Like the house isn't haunted. And I'm thinking, am I crazy? Have I just got the most vivid imagination in the world? Or is my mum definitely lying to us?
This was truly the house that never slept. Multiple times a week, the family would experience unexplainable phenomenon. But there was a sort of unspoken rule that the family would not address the activity. Hannah and her brother confided in one another, but her parents were still maintaining that there was nothing strange going on in their house.
I was in my own bedroom one night, and it was around midnight, and my bedroom was alongside the dining room on the other side, and then on the back side where my headboard was the kitchen. And there's this massive smashing and banging and crashing. It was like breaking glass. And it was insane. And the wall where my headboard is was shaking. And immediately my brother came flying into my bedroom. His room was next to mine. And he just grabbed me and we just sat on my bed and both just, what the hell is going on? You're still in that, just woken up, totally disorientated. And my mum came running down the hallway and literally just scooped us off my bed and bundled us into my brother's room. And it was the most surreal thing because that's the first time I've ever felt like something, okay, my mum's scared. Like there's something's weird here. And we just sat there all cuddled together and just had to wait for it to stop, which eventually it did. And we just looked at her and we were like, enough's enough. And she just confessed everything, had said that she had always known it was haunted, but she thought it was best for us, sort of trying to protect us. When it all stopped, she went into the we had this like middle door that separated the bedrooms from the living areas. And you just kept that door shut at night. You do not open that door. But she went through, and Ryan and I were just huddled on his bed, like waiting to see what happened. And we could hear her talking in the kitchen, but there's no one talking back. It was just my mum. I could just hear her voice, like not clear words, just mumbling. And she came back in and she told us it was okay and we could go back to bed now. Everything was going to be okay. So in the morning, because we obviously all went in thinking, what are we going to see? And we had a big glass recycling box just by the bin. That was everywhere, smashed everywhere, all across the floor, shard upon shard upon shard. And all the cupboards were open. All of the drawers were pulled open. The cutlery had been pulled out. And at that point, we were like, Mum, what did you do? What did you say? And she just said, I just told it to stop. And I just felt like it would. And that was the point where Mum started becoming a bit cleaner with us, sort of saying that all of her life, ever since she was a tiny little girl, she's kind of been able to communicate with them. She doesn't hear what they say as words back, but she says she gets this feeling of what their response is.
After this experience, the family was obviously very upset. Hannah asked her mom, why can we see these things? Why can we hear them? Why can we experience what's going on in this house? And her mom explained to her that there's two planes on this earth, parallel universes, if you will. We all live on this earth together, the living and the dead. We walk on the same streets together. We share houses. And most of the time, we never encounter one another. But some people are like beacons. They're lights. And it does draw spirits to them. Not because the spirits are trying to be scary or malevolent, but rather because they're interested in why you can see them. Maybe they have stories to tell. Maybe they have unfinished business they want to share with you. But most of the time, they're just curious. Just like how we're curious about seeing ghosts.
Actually, talking about it made it a lot easier to deal with. Ryan and I got to the stage where we would just talk to this entity. And we spent a few years actually in quite a good place with the house. So every night you'd say goodnight to this empty room and you'd say, don't come into my room tonight. And you'd shut the middle door. And life was pretty good for a while. Occasionally the middle door would creak open and it never opened it itself. It would only be if someone hadn't shut it properly. And that was the worst because my room was the one alongside the dining room. So the door was the dining room door and I'd hear it creak and wake up instantly. And you'd hear the footsteps. And if it went past my bedroom door, it was okay. But it would be when it stopped outside my bedroom door. And I'd just be staring at that door handle thinking, please don't open, please don't open, please don't open. And thank God it never once opened. It would just stand outside my door.
You cannot be a teenage girl if you do not take part in the age-old tradition of slumber parties.
I did in that time try to have sleepovers. And they never, ever went very well. Most of the time, it was just things like they'd get a foot grab or this thing would happen. He'd go in their face, like really close. It was almost just like a curious thing. Like I tried explaining to people, don't worry, he's not intimidating you. He's just curious. And I started to get a bit of a name as a weirdo, basically. So there was the final straw. The one person that I say he, I'll explain it a bit more later on, but I just sort of refer to him as a he. There was one person he did not like, one of my friends. And this one time she stayed over and we were topsy-turvy in my single bed. And she suddenly, she wakes me up and she shouts, "Stop it." And I was like, "What? I haven't done anything." And she said, "You keep pulling the blanket off me. I'm trying to sleep. Stop it." And I was like, that's not me. I'm not doing that. And she just didn't believe me. She was really like, sort of black and white, ghosts don't exist. Just shut up, Hannah. So she told me off and we laid back down. And almost immediately, the whole duvet got ripped off her and it was just thrown onto me. And she was just there exposed and she cried and cried and cried. And I pulled her up onto my end. And I remember I just had to cuddle her. And I would say, "I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. Like, I would never, if I'd have known this was going to happen, I would never have put you through this." And I begged her to stay with me, but she called her mum and her mum had to come and pick her up. And I remember I was just mortified. I was so embarrassed. And she ended up telling everybody at school, saying I was a freak and this sort of thing. And it, at that point, I was like, right, no more sleepovers. And that's when I started to have to really downplay it. Like, it sort of, rumors started going around that my mum talks to ghosts and it just was a bit rubbish for a while. And for whatever reason, he's obviously a good judge of character because she was not a nice person. As word started to get out, I just downplayed it. And over the next few years, there'd be things would happen. We were just kind of in a bit of a level place with the house. We started to learn what was acceptable and what wasn't. So people sleeping overnight, not acceptable. We didn't like that. We could have guests over, provided you were with them. We had a few incidents when we'd be away and we'd have a dog sitter who never stayed. They never made it past the middle door. It was that middle door when they'd open it. Apparently it was like cobwebs coming at them and just ice being blown in their face. And people just got a really bad vibe from the house. And we just learned not to let anyone in there if we weren't there, because we'd end up having a few bad nights after that. So it was almost like he was pissed off and we were sort of being panicked.
The family seemed to come to some sort of understanding with the house. A rhythm was established. And as long as you obeyed the rules, everything remained copacetic.
We kind of learned that at night, provided that middle door was shut, you'd have a pretty good night. He has his space, you have your space, that sort of thing. Over that time, my mum had completely come clean. She told us everything. We learned that it wasn't just this one. There was actually three ghosts in our house. The first one was a young man who wasn't at all malicious. My mum felt he didn't know he was dead. And he was just really confused. So she said it was almost like the presence of somebody who kept trying to talk to you, but you'd walk straight past him and he couldn't figure out why. And I know that one used to upset her quite a bit. There was a female who always appeared to my mum to be some type of nurse. And at this point, I'm thinking, oh, I know her. I met her. But she was only really present around children and babies. Which is really strange. I mean, when I saw her that time, I was around 6 years old, 6 or 7. But my mum said that was the last she'd ever heard of the woman being seen. Because it also turns out our neighbours all would see these same ghosts. So it wasn't just us. We'd all had similar experiences. And this one particular woman, that we call her the nurse, we don't know her name. Each time babies were born up and down the sort of bungalows, that's where you'd find her. So my mum just felt it was always a nice kind of thing, but I mean, I didn't feel my experience was particularly nice with her. The third one is the old man. Now, we don't know his name. These are just our nicknames. My mum says she just kind of assumes he once owned the house or one of the houses. I don't know which one. He gets really angry really easily, doesn't like change at all. So whenever we do renovations to the house, he'd be the one that would flare up and things would get bad. And if he had guests over, he was the one that didn't like it. Really, really, really possessive. The nurse, my mum said she used to have all kinds of hell with her when we were babies. And the amount of time she said she'd just hear us babbling away talking and she'd peek into the room and there'd just be this woman stood over our cot, quite often with her hands in the cot, stroking us, touching us, like always, always nice. But yeah, she was just always there. And we had a dog at the time who was almost like a nanny dog. He was really, really possessive. Sort of not possessive, protective. And he just liked this woman. It's the weirdest thing. And my mum said she actually found a lot of comfort in that because it helped her to stop being frightened of her because she wasn't a danger. If the dog accepted her, then surely she was okay. But mum said the first time she saw the dog go up and wag his tail and sit next to the woman, and she just looked down and smiled at him and carried on stroking us, she was like, oh shit, this is real. The dog has seen her too. Oh God, I'm not imagining this.
The really interesting thing about this house is it wasn't all bad. It wasn't even necessarily a frightening place. There was just other people who lived there. And as long as the residents were happy, getting along, and healthy, the home seemed to get into a rhythm, and the activity became less and less. It was only when that balance was disturbed that things would take a turn for the worse.
And then I upset the balance. I actually developed an eating disorder when I was about 13 years old. I was really deceitful. Like, obviously, the whole eating disorder concept is you just lie to everybody. And for whatever reason, it really seemed to anger the old man. He didn't like it. He didn't like what was going on in the house. And I started fusing lights. So if I tried to turn on a light switch, the light bulb would blow up every time. I had this really strange effect on electricity. So turning on a TV, it would blow. It's really hard to describe. It was almost just like there was this extra current on me.
There is a really interesting school of thought that suggests that teenagers could be a sort of conduit for unexplainable activity. Some believe that the complexities of adolescence mixed with stress, hormones, and heightened emotions can cause a phenomenon known as spontaneous reoccurring psychokinesis. This theory states that all that pent-up emotion can unconsciously spiral outwards from the adolescents in a sort of mental energy, which affects their surroundings, creating almost poltergeist activity. Now, let's be very clear. There is very little evidence to suggest that this theory actually exists. Experts are highly undecided and torn on the subject. But I thought it was interesting to mention, as Hannah fell within that age range and was under a lot of stress at the time, her own energy could have upset the world around her on many levels. And knowing that this house was so sensitive to the other residents inhabiting it, she really could have upset that balance. As Hannah continued into her teenage years, so did the activity.
And there was one day, my parents were out one night and my brother had a party. We had a summer house at the bottom of the garden. And he had this party, which I was a part of. And then I went upstairs to the house and went to bed. And since the nurse incident, I had this thing. I would always have to face the wall when I slept. It was just Like, I think it's just a protective thing. And as I was falling asleep, there is this flash of light and the wall was gone. And the dining room wasn't the dining room. The dining room was like a ward. And alongside that, where I was laying, eye to eye with me, body to body with me, was this young soldier laying in the bed. But it was like a bed attached to my bed, sort of like we'd been pushed together. And he was so sad. So sad. Like, again, it was just this flash. It happened so fast. But I have never felt so much pain in my life, like in that split second, looking at his eyes, right up against my own eyes. And as quick as it happened, it went away. I fell back and sort of scrambled out of my bed onto the floor.
In that split second, Hannah saw the home in its traditional state, a World War I hospital. Perhaps the man in the bed next to her was the young man who her mom felt in the home. Perhaps she was feeling him at a really scary and emotional time in his life, or the end of his life.
I took a bit of a turn for the worst. And within that year, and started getting quite sort of heavily into things I shouldn't, and really angering the balance in the house. I think it was just the atmosphere that I was causing amongst my parents and my brother, that just the deceitfulness. The house just didn't like it. My mum knew something was going on, but she said she could actually gauge what was going on based on what was happening in the house. She knew that I was hiding something.
It seems like the house had its own way of dealing with Hannah as well.
There was one morning where I woke up, I put my CD player on, get ready for work, and I went to the toilet, and I'm on the toilet and my CD turns off. And I remember just shouting, I was just like, Ryan, turn my music on, stop being a dick. And there's no response. So I'm like, oh, for God's sake. And I get out the toilet, I go to open my door, which had been pushed to, and I put my hand on the doorknob. And as I did, the door slammed in my face, like really aggressively slammed in my face. And I'm going, Ryan, get out of my room. And I banged on the door and it banged back. And the music went whoom, like, I mean, that I got given that CD player, it was my grandmother's, like that thing could not go as loud as this music went. It was unbearable, like felt like my ears were bleeding loud. And I was going, turn it down, banging on the door. And the door started going bang, bang, bang back. At which point I'm like, oh, that's not Ryan. Oh my God. And my dog by this point is going crazy, like really like hackles up, barking. He was not a barky dog, but he was barking like crazy at the door. And I just thought, I've got to get out of this house right now.
As Hannah rushed to escape the house, she found herself face to face with the middle door. As soon as she approached it, it slammed shut in her face. She pushed and pushed and pushed on the door until finally it swung open on its own accord. And she ran into the backyard, dog in tow.
And I got into the garden. The dog, massive fairy, because he just ran with me like he was terrified.
So there Hannah stood, in her backyard, in the freezing cold, in her underwear with her dog, waiting for someone, anyone to come help her. The music coming from the CD player was so ear-splittingly loud, the neighbors were leaving their houses and coming to bang on her front door. Hannah's mom arrived home to a very chaotic scene. From the bottom of the road, she could hear the music emitting from the house. As she went into the backyard, she realized her daughter was sitting there, freezing cold, hardly dressed, and absolutely terrified.
And I just cried, absolutely hysterical. And she just cuddled me and she was like, right, I'm going to show you something. And I held my hand. She was like, you've got to come in the house with me. I said, I'm not going back. I'm never stepping foot in that house again. I said, it was, it that was like an attack. That's the first time I've ever felt really attacked. And she was like, you've just got to come with me. So she held my hand and took me into the house. And she just stood in the kitchen. She didn't go all the way to my room. She just stood in the kitchen and started shouting at this empty room. And she was really, really upset. Like, I've never seen my mum quite like this before. And she was just shouting, you are frightening her. Look at this. Look at her. You have done this to her. She's freezing cold. You have done this. This is not fair. Enough's enough. And as she was just in this kind of rage, and the music started to get lower and lower and lower from my bedroom until the music stopped. And I could just feel it, like everything was softer. And it's the strangest thing. The only way I can describe it is when there is a angry spirit, it's like you could almost chew the air. It's so thick and heavy. You can't see anything. It's just looks like a room, but the feeling is so heavy. And it just got softer and lighter. And that was that. And I learned then that I understood what my mum meant when she said she can feel their response. She doesn't hear their response. And I got it. And from then on, I actually got really good at, I didn't communicate with ghosts. Like, I don't hear them. They don't tell me things. But I was a bit like my mum. I was able to start having the courage to ask them and tell them how they were making me feel. And usually they'd back off or something.
Sometimes the otherworldly residents of this home brought the family something truly peculiar. They brought them comfort.
There was a really nice one actually with the old man, which never happened. My mum and dad, our dog was really, really sick. And my mum and dad went away for the weekend, and my brother went out to a party. And I begged him not to go. I said, there's something wrong. Like, I've just got a really bad feeling. Please stay with me tonight. And he was like, I can't, I'm going out. So he went. And I was supposed to go do some babysitting, but I called up and cancelled because just something felt off. I didn't want to leave the dog. So I went to bed, said goodnight to the dog, left him in the kitchen where his bed was. And I got woken up I don't know what time it was. I got woken up. There was something heavy on my lap. And my dog's head was made out of my duvet. And it was heavy, like weighty. And again, I've just woken up and I'm looking at this thing. And instantly it hit me and I thought, oh dear God, no. And I just jumped out of bed, ran through the middle door, which is unheard of for me. That was like, I just knew he'd gone. And as soon as I saw him, he'd passed. He was still warm, which means he'd obviously just gone. And I kind of believe that was him telling me to come to him. I was on my own and I didn't know what to do. And the kitchen cupboard door, the larder, opened. And immediately I could feel someone behind me. And I just was crying my eyes out and crying. And I just said, please, not now. Go away. I don't need this now. Please leave me alone. And the steps continued coming up behind me on the tile. And he just put his hand on my shoulder. And it was so cold. But it really actually brought me some comfort. And then he just walked away again and stepped back. I always found that like quite a comforting thing. And that's when I stopped being scared of it.
Now, Hannah, I have to know, do your family still live in that house?
They do. The problem is with this house, you can't actually get a mortgage on them anymore. So my parents just have never been able to leave because I could never understand it when I was a child. I'd just beg them, just let's move house. Please, let's just move house. And they'd always say, we can't. This is our house. It turns out on several occasions they had tried, but yeah, where it's a non-standard build, you can't get mortgages easily on them. So you'd have to get a cash buyer, and the amount it would sell for cash, they wouldn't have enough money to stay in the village we lived in.
For the most part, Hannah's family are very happy in the house. They have found that balance. You can't renovate, you can't have sleepovers, and you must close the dining room door at night. But as long as you adhere to those rules, there seems to be some sort of multidimensional understanding. Although it's been 7 years since Hannah moved out, she still follows some traditions she established when she was living there.
But even now, when I go and visit my parents, like, I'm a grown woman now with children of my own, and I walk into that house and I say, it's only me, every single time without fail. I have never, ever slept in that house since I left home. I realized, although I found a happy balance with the house, I'm never ever staying there again, and I will never let my children stay there.
And this is with very good reason. When Hannah's brother had his first child, him, the baby, and his wife came to spend the night in the family home. The baby was in a travel cot at the end of the bed in his old bedroom. And although Ryan seemed to be able to sleep through everything, his wife wasn't so lucky.
But she got woken up. She just had this funny feeling, and she could make out a haze at the end of the bed. And she sat bolt upright, because this is her baby in the travel cot. And this woman just turned and faced her and just looked at her dead in the eye. And she just looked back down at the baby, and she was smiling.
Not surprisingly, they didn't make it through the night. In the middle of the night, the family got up and went home. Although there seems to be harmony in the home most of the time, unfortunately for Hannah's niece, the nurse wouldn't be the only otherworldly resident she would meet.
All along the bed, my mum has since put these like mirrored wardrobe doors, like sliding wardrobes. And she was laying asleep in the bed and facing the mirror, and she woke up and he was stood behind her, and she could see him behind her in the mirror. And he just looked so angry, and he leant over and put his hands down on the bed behind her back, and she felt the weight of the bed go down, and she screamed and screamed and screamed. And my mum came flying in. It just grabbed my niece, cuddled her, and started screaming, "How dare you? How dare you do that?" And I love my parents so much. And of course, I've got fond memories in that house, but there's no way I'm going to put my children through that. Mum said to me, "So who wants the house in the will then?" Looked at her, I said, "No thanks, I'm good."
What's so incredible to me is that this family has adapted to their surroundings, and they have figured out a way to live a happy and full and fulfilled life in a house that for most people would be absolutely terrifying, a total deal breaker. But this incredible family has found a way to strike that balance. Do you have a spooky story you'd like to share? I'd love to hear it. Drop me an email at thewestlondonwitch@gmail.com or find us on Instagram and Facebook at thewestlondonwitch. If you enjoyed today's episode, don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review. And come follow us for additional content on Instagram and Facebook. Until next time, merry meet, merry part, and merry meet again. Thank you. The West London Witch is created by me, Rebecca Strazina. Our sound designer and production magician is the incredible Danny Cross. Our theme music was bespokely written and performed by the wickedly talented Kyle Hall. Our cover art is the beautiful collaboration between Lizzie Wilson and Jake Bowser. Special thanks to Miss Sinead Bowers, our quality control and biggest cheerleader. And thank you to you, all of our listeners all over the world. These are your stories. Thank you for sharing them with us.